Metaora, Greece. The monasteries are built into the steep, inaccessible rocks. Some buildings sitting perched atop high, almost vertical columns. While originally an attractive refuge from the Ottoman Turks, it later proved just as secure from the living dead. Post-war staircases, mostly metal or wood, and all easily retractable, catered to the growing influx of both pilgrims and tourists. Metaora has become a popular destination for both groups in recent years. Some seek wisdom and spiritual enlightenment. Some simply search for peace. Stanley MacDonald is one of the latter, a veteran of almost every campaign across the expanse of his native Canada. He first encountered the living dead during a different war, when the 3rd Battalion of Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry was involved in drug interdiction operations in Kyrgyzstan. Please don't confuse us with the American Alpha teams. This was long before their deployment, before the panic, before the Israeli self-quarantine. This was even before the first major public outbreak in Cape Town. This was just at the beginning of the spread, before anybody knew anything about what was coming. Our mission was strictly conventional. Opium and hash, the primary export crop of terrorists around the world. That's all we'd ever encountered in that rocky wasteland. Traders and thugs and locally hired muscle. That's all we expected. That's all we were ready for. The cave entrance was easy to find. We'd tracked it back from the blood trail leading to the caravan. Right away, we knew something was wrong. There were no bodies. Rival tribes always left their victims laid out and mutilated as a warning to others. There was plenty of blood. Blood and bits of brown, rotting flesh. But the only corpses we found were the pack mules. They'd been brought down, not shot, by what looked like wild animals. Their bellies were torn out, and large bite wounds covered their flesh. We guessed it had to be wild dogs. Packs of those damn things roamed the valleys, big and nasty as Arctic wolves. What was most puzzling was the cargo, still in their saddlebags, or just scattered about the bodies. Now, even if this wasn't a territorial hit, even if it was a religious or tribal revenge killing, no one just abandons 50 kilos of prime, raw, bad brown, or perfectly good assault rifles, or expensive personal trophies like watches, mini-disc players, and GPS locators. Note 1. Bad Brown, a nickname for the type of opium grown in the Badakhshan province of Afghanistan. End note. The blood trail led up the mountain path from the massacre in the Wadi. A lot of blood. Anyone who lost that much wouldn't be getting up again. Only somehow he did. He hadn't been treated. There were no other track marks. From what we could tell, this man had run, bled, fallen face down. We still could see his bloody face mark imprinted in the sand. Somehow, without suffocating, without bleeding to death, he'd lain there for some time, then just gotten up again and started walking. These new tracks were very different from the old. They were slower, closer together. His right foot was dragging, clearly why he'd lost his shoe, an old, worn-out Nike high top. The drag marks were sprinkled with fluid. Not blood, not human, but droplets of hard, black, crusted ooze that none of us recognized. We followed these and the drag marks to the entrance of the cave. There was no opening fire, no reception of any kind. We found the tunnel entrance unguarded and wide open. Immediately we began to see bodies, men killed by their own booby traps. They looked like they'd been trying, running, to get out. Beyond them, in the first chamber, we saw our first evidence of a one-sided firefight. one-sided because only one wall of the cavern was pockmarked by small arms. Opposite that wall were the shooters. They'd been torn apart, their limbs, their bones, shredded and gnawed, some still clutching their weapons, one of those severed hands with an old Makarov still in the grip. The hand was missing a finger. I found it across the room, along with the body of another unarmed man who'd been hit over 100 times. Several rounds had taken the top of his head off. The finger was still stuck between his teeth. Every chamber told a similar story. We found smashed barricades, discarded weapons. We found more bodies, or pieces of them. Only the intact ones died from headshots. We found meat, chewed, pulped flesh, bulging from their throats and stomachs. You could see by the blood trails, the footprints, the shell casings, and pockmarks that the entire battle had originated from the infirmary. We discovered several cots, all bloody. At the end of the room, we found a headless, I'm guessing, doctor, lying on the dirt floor next to a cot with soiled sheets and clothes and an old left-footed, worn-out Nike high top. The last tunnel we checked had collapsed from the use of a booby-trapped demolition charge. A hand was sticking out of the limestone. It was still moving. I reacted from the gut, leaned forward, grabbed the hand, felt that grip. Like steel, almost crushed my fingers. I pulled back, tried to get away. It wouldn't let me go. I pulled harder, dug my feet in. First, the arm came free. Then the head, the torn face, wide eyes and gray lips. Then the other hand, grabbing my arm and squeezing. Then came the shoulders. I fell back, the thing's top half coming with me. The waist down was still jammed under the rocks, still connected to the upper torso by a line of entrails. It was still moving, still clawing me, trying to pull my arm into its mouth. I reached for my weapon. The burst was angled upward, connecting just under and behind the chin and spraying its brains across the ceiling above us. I'd been the only one in the tunnel when it happened. I was the only witness. He pauses. Exposure to unknown chemical agents. That's what they told me back in Edmonton. That or an adverse reaction to our own prophylactic medication. They threw in a healthy dose of PTSD for good measure. Note 2. PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. End note. I just needed rest. Rest and long-term evaluation. Evaluation. That's what happens when it's your own side. It's only interrogation when it's the enemy. They teach you how to resist the enemy, how to protect your mind and spirit. They don't teach you how to resist your own people, especially people who think they're trying to help you see the truth. They didn't break me. I broke myself. I wanted to believe them, and I wanted them to help me. I was a good soldier, well-trained, experienced. I knew what I could do to my fellow human beings and what they could do to me. I thought I was ready for anything. He looks out at the valley, his eyes unfocused. Who in his right mind could have been ready for this?